Hello there and welcome along to this racing postcast. It's Monday the 8th of February, the day after the Dublin Racing Festival has reached its conclusion in Ireland, and we're going to talk all about it. I'm Maddie Playle presenting as usual, and we have David Jennings on the call as well as Tom Collins and podcast first timer James Short from Paddy Power as well. Throughout the next 50 minutes or so, we'll be reviewing that Dublin Racing Festival. We'll be pinpointing what we learned looking towards Cheltenham and the rest of the season. What about the Musselburgh gamble that went awry? We'll get the guys' opinions on that, as well as David Mullins' retirement. David did a wonderful piece with him in the paper just a couple of days ago. And we have the Betfair hurdle to look forward to this weekend as well. Always a highlight of the season, that. And with Champ and Altior possibly returning too, it's going to be a meeting to keep an eye on. So let's get cracking with the Dublin Racing Festival review first up, because it was a fabulous 2 days. Now, before we came on air, myself and Josh Stacey were just having a chat, and he actually said that since 2018, only six winners have managed to follow up at Cheltenham. I think we'll be shocked if a couple can't do that this year. Now, let's start off with Gaillard de Menil. He's now the Ballymore favourite, and there could well have been some Albert Bartlett horses in behind. I think this was a really high-quality race, and it had a lot of depth to it. DJ, I'll go to you first. Do you think he's a worthy Ballymore favourite now?
Yeah, he deserves to be favoured, I think, just about. I think it's a good race because you've got Brave Man's Game in there, and you've also got Bob Olinger, who are both highly regarded. But now Gaillard de Menil has the strongest piece of form. He was an emphatic winner. He's a very classy horse. He travels through his races with plenty of enthusiasm. He jumps well. And I just like the distance he put between himself and Statler and Gentleman's Game from maybe 100 yards from the last hurdle to the line. I thought it was decisive. Paul Townend has always really liked him. And it was very hard to kind of find flaws in the performance, to be honest with you. Whether I think he'll win the Ballymore, I would still just about be in the Brave Man's Game camp. I just adore Brave Man's Game. But it set the tone for the weekend. Gaillard de Menil was really, really good.
That's very interesting that you're sticking with the other horse, the Paul Nicholls horse. I thought this horse, as you say, he's got a lot of speed, hasn't he? And he's always struck me as more of a sort of supreme type, but he's certainly plugging the Ballymore gap for Willie Mullins now anyway. TC, I mean, what did you make of those in behind? I'm a big Fakira fan for the Albert Bartlett. I thought that was a brilliant run from him.
Yeah, Fakira caught my eye as well as everyone else's, didn't he? For the Albert Bartlett, he stuck on powerfully up the home straight and came from an unpromising position to finish a good fourth. He's been touted for the Albert Bartlett for weeks, months probably, by some people. So I'm sure that bandwagon will just roll on and gain more followers. I was also really interested in Ganapathy. I thought he ran a great race until the last hurdle, after which he faded. Maybe he just didn't get the trip. Drop back to 2 miles or 2 mile 4 should favour him. I've seen these. He's got an entry in the Supreme, and he's about 25s for that. So that could be of interest. I thought the winner was very interesting and impressive. I just don't think he should be favourite. I think it's a slight overreaction by the firms to cut him into favouritism. I think Bob Olinger and Brave Man's Game hold stronger form lines at this stage.
Okay, so explain, James, why he's at the top of your market now. He's presumably been very popular.
Yeah, he has been popular, and he's 130 now for the Ballymore. He settled really nicely in behind, didn't he? The herd worked under Paul Town, and he was on the inside, and he managed, as David just said, to kick on after the last to win quite impressively. So he is at the top of the betting market for the Ballymore. Brave Man's Game, who David likes, is 4-1, and then you've got Bob Olinger for Henry, who we've not seen since winning the Lawlers at 9-2, and it's 10-1 bar those. So yeah, good performance, and it really does cement the great challenge that the Donnelly family are going to have at Cheltenham next month as well.
It does. They've got such strength and depth in their string, haven't they? Moving on to Chacun Pour Soi. What did we learn in the Dublin Chase? Min was an early casualty. He exited the scene, but this horse was impressive, as he always is, and he delivered once again. He looks the horse to beat in the Champion Chase now. But what more can you say about him, TC? What did you think of the performance? Because he showed different qualities to those that I'm used to seeing from him.
I thought he was really impressive. He achieved a joint career best RPR of 176. He just jumps brilliantly, doesn't he? He attacks his fences. And when Paul Townend asked for a little bit more, he really picked up in style and just cleared away from Fakir Duderi. And Townend was even allowed to adopt the classic Joe Fanning rein adjustment I tweeted. He did that weird thing with his arms going out and adjusting the reins, and he quickened up nicely. He must be a big fan of Joe Fanning. I didn't know that. I don't know if we learned anything, to be honest, because we just know Jacques Pourceaur is that good. If we learn anything, it's probably that Altior just won't be able to live with him on that form.
Okay, and what about Min and the Ryanair picture as a result, DJ? What can you tell us about that? Presumably Min, I think he's been, you know, it's been reported that he's absolutely fine.
Yeah, I spoke to Patrick after the race, and he just said he didn't have a cut at his fences at all. And he said he could have persisted, but he didn't see the point. He said he wasn't going to win the race. And, you know, for the horse's well-being, he thought the sensible thing to do was just pull up early and make sure he didn't have a hard race. It reminded me a little bit of Min when he won the Durkin, and I think it was the year before last, where he was very iffy at his fences. He didn't seem to be meeting them on the right stride. For whatever reason, he wasn't on a going day. And there are a lot of people saying, you don't read too much into that. It's only 2 miles and, you know, he's stepping up and tripping the Ryanair. But you're going into the Ryanair on the back of a poor jumper performance, and he's getting on in years as well. I wouldn't fancy him for the Ryanair. He was one of my strongest fancies of the week last year at Cheltenham. This year, I honestly couldn't have him on my mind for the Ryanair after that.
And would you be looking to oppose Jacques Pourceaur each way with anything, or do you think he's just going to win and it's pointless having a bet in that race now?
I think Jacques Pourceaur is actually a little bit underrated in England. You say you saw something different in Jacques Pourceaur than you've seen before. But I think he's just been doing what he did on Saturday all his life, really. Just winning races easily. Yes, he was beaten by Aplutar when he had a rush preparation the Christmas before last. But he's just an exceptional racehorse that jumps well, that travels well in his races, that stays, that has a turn of foot, and that just oozes class. As regards the overpriced horse in the Champion Chase, without any shadow of a doubt, is Defi Desai. We saw on Saturday that Philip Hobbs' team are coming back into form. I was very much in a minority, but I loved his run in the Clarence House. I thought down the back, I thought his jumping was like the old Defi, and the vibes beforehand were that he badly, badly needed the run. I think he's entered on Saturday at Newbury, and I would not be giving up on Defi Desai at all. I think it's going to be a rematch of that cracking novice chase at Punchestown from a few years ago between Defi Desai and Jacques Pourceaur. He's probably not good enough to beat Jacques Pourceaur, but I'm definitely not giving up on Defi Desai.
I've been in that boat for a long, long time now. I love Defi Desai, but it's getting chancy at this point. TC, would you be looking elsewhere in the Champion Chase for some each-way value or not?
Probably not. I would be either looking to include Jacques Pourceaur in probably a Willie Mullins accumulator across the week, or I would just be watching the race. I think Jacques Pourceaur's in a league of his own, and I don't really like any of the horses he's against, so it wouldn't be an each-way betting race for me.
Nice. Let's move on to Energamine. I'm not sure how we pronounce it, but we certainly know he's very, very good. A real favourite of mine, this horse. Do we think he can trouble Shishkin in the Arkle on the back of this performance, DJ? This was massive.
It was. And, you know, the time backed that up. It was seriously impressive. Like, he was 4.23.5, I think he was. And Jacques Pourceaur was 4.24.8. So you're talking, you know, a second and a half quicker than Jacques Pourceaur, and they didn't hang about in the Dublin Chase either. Yeah, he's a funny sort of a horse. Like, he very much came into this season under the radar. He won at Goran Park, maiden hurdle, just before the Cheltenham Festival, at that meeting that Bob Olinger won his bumper at. And we're all kind of focused on Cheltenham at that stage. And Energamine is a horse that, going into this season, I doubt anybody had them in their tent to follow. I doubt anybody had them on their radar. But he's been pretty flawless over fences. I just think Shishkin is just that little bit special. Like, I don't know whether Energamine can get Shishkin really at it. I think the quicker they go, I think having him in the race will suit Shishkin. And while it's going to make for fascinating viewing, like, I couldn't have All Mankind on my mind, to be honest. I think it's a two-horse race, and it's going to be fascinating. And what adds to it is that Paul Townend said that Energamine is not a one-trick pony. He said, like, he'd love nearly to get a lead and, you know, something to take him along. But he just said it's the way the race had panned out. And again on Saturday, nothing took him on at all, which was bizarre.
They left him to it, didn't they?
Yeah. And like when I did the preview for that race and I said they're going to go a million here, like, because Felix de Gea was in there and there was so many potential front runners and none of them wanted to make it. So he got a freebie. Look, the time backs up the visual performance. It's just that I think Shishkin is something really special. So I just can't see how Energy Mean is going to beat him. But that's not to say he's not a wonderful horse. Like,
okay. And James, what price can people get about Energy Mean now if they want to back him for the Arkle?
Yeah, he's 9-4 now. Shishkin is just odds on at 10-11. I've got to echo what David has to say there, what DJ has to say. I was quite surprised that he had bowled along from the front, actually, at the weekend. As David says, I thought there was a host of pace setters in the contest. So it was a good performance from the front. The time says it all as well. And it's going to be a real closer match than what people might have thought over the past week or so, because after Shishkin's win at Doncaster, it was all about talking about Shishkin up against maybe a possible Envoy Allen match at some point. But this horse, he's done it quite nicely. He's gone under the radar and now he's got the respect I think he deserves on your side of the Irish Sea.
Fantastic. I can't wait for that clash at Cheltenham. Now, this was a career best performance from Honeysuckle in the Irish Champion Hurdle. A lot of the short price favourites won the feature event, but this was her best by some considerable way, much better than her performance 12 months ago. And now I think with some firms, she's joint favourite for the Champion Hurdle on the back of that. Obviously, Connections made the decision to go to the Mares last year. Just remind us of those prices, James, before we get took into this brilliant performance.
Yes, we've got 9-4 joint favourites now, the two. So Epitant and Honeysuckle, 9-4 joint favourites. 9-1 Silver Streak, who bet Epitant has been over Christmas. And then you've got Sarja out to 10-1. The horse we didn't see over the weekend was Aspire Tower, 10-1. Abracadabra's 10 lengths behind at the weekend, 12-1. But she silenced the doubters of the weekend, hasn't she? And she's remained unbeaten. It's going to be an interesting match between the two when we come to the big race on day one.
Yeah, both mares receiving that allowance that I'm sure we'll talk about throughout this next section. I was one of the doubts, I must admit it, but this blew me away. TC, I think she deserves to be outright favourite for the Champion Hurdle now. What do you say to that?
Well, she's a model of consistency, isn't she? And obviously, Epitant didn't produce her best last time out. So on that basis, it's hard to argue that Honeysuckle shouldn't be outright favourite. Obviously, Epitant won the Champion Hurdle last year. And she always produces her best at Cheltenham, she has produced her best at Cheltenham in the past, so we know the track's no problem for her, nor it is for Honeysuckle. I think she most definitely can win the Champion Hurdle. I wrote in Festival Files a week and a half ago that the Champion Hurdle pitcher really needed another challenger, because Epitant, although she looked vulnerable on her most recent effort, she was just at the head of the market and there was just nothing in there against her. Now with Honeysuckle in there, it should be a great race between the mares. I was holding a slight bit of hope out for Saldier to return back to form, but he was disappointing yet again. So I can't be having him for the Champion Hurdle, despite my anti-post bet at the moment. It just looks a match race, doesn't it, between two great mares, getting the allowance. It's a pin job. Who do you fancy, the English or the Irish?
I'm maybe thinking with the Irish now, because she has a lot less questions to answer. And having still, you know, remained unbeaten, that is incredible. DJ, I think for me, this performance was so good because the ride as well, her partnership, Rachel Blackmore, with this mare is just wonderful. You can tell they have so much sort of connection and that she trusts this horse and she knows exactly the response she's going to get. Whose side would you be on when it comes to the Champion Hurdle?
If you had asked me 3 days ago, I would have laughed at you and I would have said, how could Honeysuckle beat Epitant if Epitant was on form? But if Epitant reproduces her Champion Hurdle win last year, you would have to say that Honeysuckle's performance on Saturday would better that. She ran to a Racing Post rating, I think, of 163. I think with Honeysuckle, you just have to judge Saturday completely different than anything else. This was not beating Ronald Pump by half a length. It was not beating Darver Star in the race last year by half a length. This was something completely different. And maybe, just maybe, that performance at Cheltenham was something spectacular when she beat Benny the Jew, because, like, we all know the fallout from that and how Willie said they got tactics wrong and Robbie Power let, you know, Rachel up his inside and stuff. But maybe it was just an unbelievable performance by Honeysuckle, because the Mullins camp genuinely could not contemplate defeat. They were staggered that Honeysucker was able to beat Benny the Dude that day. On Saturday, the pace he showed from three out to two out to the home turn to get fast horses off the bridle, speedy horses like Sharjah, Abacadabras, who have turn of foot, and they were asked for their turn of foot turning into the second last, and they couldn't live with her. That was when the race unfolded, and she was really, really, really good. I genuinely think Henry de Bromhead holds the key to the champion hurdle now, because I think he could have a 1-2 in the race. I really do. Aspire Tower, from everything I'm hearing, he has turned absolutely inside out since the Matson hurdle at Christmas. He's filled out. His work has got better. He looks better. He looks stronger. And, you know, I have a lot of dealings with Henry de Bromhead. I speak to him most weeks. And in general, you could not meet a more pessimistic man. Like, you know, you genuinely couldn't. Like, he worries. He's a worrier. He worries about everything in a nice kind of a way. But he really does, like, if, you know, he panics and he worries. And I was surprised at how positive he was going into the Saturday's race with Honeysuckle. He was saying things that he rarely says, like, her work is better than it's ever been. You know, she's stronger. She did the best piece of work we've seen during, like, he was saying things that he had never said before. And that showed in the race. You know, Rachel hopped off Honeysuckle, and I was beside her when she hopped off, and she goes, Henry, that's the sharpest he has ever been. He was so sharp. It was incredible how sharp he was. And yeah, I think we just have to view Honeysuckle in a completely different light. For me, Henry de Bromhead holds the key to the champion hurdle.
I agree. This was completely different from anything we'd seen from her before. But let's move on to yet another hugely impressive performance in Kilcrut. I'm told it's pronounced that way. He won the bumper on Saturday, and this was a monstrous performance. Better than Sir Gerhard, DJ? Do you think, you know how the land lies in Ireland with those horses at the minute? Is that a fair assessment?
I don't know. I would say visually, it was the most impressive performance of the entire weekend. Visually. Now, visually is very important here, because the race fell apart. It absolutely fell apart. And Patrick Mullins rode the perfect race. He said between kind of the leaving the back straight and the turn into the home straight, he was kind of going, oh, am I going to get to Ramille here? Whatever way you pronounce that, Ramilez. Am I going to get to him? And then all of a sudden, bang, they just stopped. And even speaking to Danny Mullins for the Monday Jury today, and he would know the horse very well, obviously, because his father used to train the horse. He thought there was a little bit of an overreaction as well, because the race fell apart a little bit. He is a very, very good horse. But I just wonder, are we being kind of lulled into a false sense of how brilliant he is because the race fell apart? They went far too quick. We could see that for most of the race, and fell into his lap. I would just about favour Sir Gerhard still. I think there was more substance to that performance at Navan. And obviously, you have to believe your eyes. And, you know, Kilcrut was amazing. But I just have my doubts a little bit.
Okay. And from my view, it's disappointing that as a six-year-old, he's running in a bumper. Because he could be a fair old age before he gets to sort of open company. What would your argument be for that? You know, he's had some experience now. I want to see these horses over hurdles as soon as possible.
No. I have to say, I would disagree with your. I read your piece on NVLN, and, you know, it was well written and stuff, but I would completely disagree with you. Like, I don't see how it's a flaw in the system that NVLN is running in a novice race. Like, he's ran his bumpers, he's ran his novice hurdles, and then he's got novice chase. That's the way racing is. And it's the same with Kilcrut. Obviously, you know, he might have been a bit slow and backward early on in his career, but, like, he's gone the route that he's gone, and that's just the way it is. That's the way racing is. And I'm sorry, but I'd have to disagree with you. I don't see the problem.
That's absolutely fine. Let's move on to Sandown then. Let's see if we disagree or agree on these performances. The Silly Isles went to Sporting John. Where did this come from, TC? I don't think many of us were expecting this.
No, he was largely unconsidered in the market, wasn't he? He probably still sits behind the likes. Well, he definitely still sits behind the likes of Royal Pagai, Monkfish, NVLN, Shishkin and Ergamine. Maybe Allah. I mean, I could keep going. But he just has plenty of ability. I think that's 4 from 6 now for Sporting John. And his resurgence collided with the return to form of the Philip Hobbs stable, as DJ alluded to earlier in the podcast. There's definitely extra improvement to come over 3 miles with him. He just looks an out-and-out stayer to me. He was outpaced on the first circuit and looked beaten at certain points in the race, but he came through strong in the end. I don't know what the form's worth. Shamblou and Mazir Dezobo, who finished second and fourth respectively, definitely would have wanted the ground a bit quicker than it was, not as testing. And obviously Hitman fell and brought down Dan de Compagnie. So the form probably wasn't great. But it's great to see Philip Hobbs having winners. He keeps going through these spells of no winners and droughts, a bit like Colin Tizard, who I'm sure we'll come to in a minute. But it's great to see him get a winner on the board. And if, like DJ said, the Hobbs resurgence continues, then Defi de Soy and these kind of horses will be players next month.
And talking of resurgence of form, Native River for the Colin Tizard stable, they've had a dreadful time of things, but he put in a brilliant performance to win the Cotswold Chase. He's running the Gold Cup so many times now. I think he's won it. He's been third and fourth in the race. What does he mean for this year's renewal in terms of, I suppose he's going to be a pace angle and he could turn it into a real test, whereas last year it didn't end up being that, DJ. What do you think of this win looking forward?
He just needs rain, doesn't he? He just needs rain the week of the Gold Cup. He needs it to turn into a slog and similar circumstances to when he won the Gold Cup, I think. But you just got to love him. Like, I was in Leopardstown and we were watching the race on the telly. And, like, he kind of just makes you smile when you watch him. And I know that sounds a bit corny and a bit soft and ever, but you just watch him and you go, this is actually years and years ago when you're watching racing and I would have grown up with like Joe Dammy and all those type of staying chasers, like when I was really young, maybe 7, 8 and 9. And you kind of remember back to those days and how you fell in love with those staying chasers. And then you see Native River and you just say to yourself, this is exactly what you want a staying chaser to be. A horse that absolutely loves what he does. He wears his heart on his sleeve. That the more tough it is, the better he is. You would obviously be very concerned that there's a more progressive horse that would beat him in a Gold Cup, and whether he can beat Album Photo at this stage of his career, I would be surprised. But again, if it turned into a slog, it's obviously a bit later this year. It's the third week in March and the chances of better ground on the Friday are increased. And if you're a Native River fan, I would say if you back him, you're just praying for a slog. And yeah, he's one of these horses you just don't need to back, like when he's running races, because you can really, really enjoy him.
That's very true. I do think that, I think he's 16 to 1 now for the Gold Cup. I think that's fair. You know, as you say, if he gets his soft ground, he's so reliable. TC, what did you like about this performance? Or rather, what didn't you like? Because it was just fantastic.
Yeah, he's such a good horse, isn't he? I love Native River. You can have all of these exciting performances from up-and-coming prospects or current stars like Chacon Pourceoir and Honeysuckle and the like. But there's just something about these old gutsy chasers who face adversity, with Colin Tizard's table being out of form. The form just completely on the ropes there. The fact that Yarlarenki took him on early doors. It's just the way he pulled away up the hill. It just gives me chills. I'm not even his biggest fan. Like, I think he's a great horse, but he's rarely done me any favours in the punting view, perspective and everything. But he just deserves serious praise. He even got a race post rating of 177, the same as he got when he won the 2018 Gold Cup. And now that he's 11, it's just excellent, isn't it? I don't think he wins or gets close in the Gold Cup this year, but he just brings enthusiasm to the race, an extra character. He ensures a strong pace. It's brilliant. It just wouldn't be the same without him, would it?
No, it wouldn't. And I, for one, can't wait to see him there. You talk about money and you talk about gambling and horses doing you favours. Well, we're going to talk a lot more about that just after this quick pause.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18plusbegambleaware.org.
Welcome back to this Monday postcast. Now, as well as some fantastic racing over the weekend, there was a big talking point when there was a massive gamble at Musselburgh and Southall yesterday. The first was in the 125 at Musselburgh. That was far away, and Julie, that bolted up. Then we went over to the 235 at Southall for Blowing Dixie, the 4-6 favourite. That went off, and that horse went in as well. And it was all going down to the 425 back at Musselburgh, with the former Nicky Henderson trained Gallagher's Cross. That horse couldn't complete this brilliant and huge gamble at 4-5 and ended up finishing fourth. Now, what's your view on this, DJ, as a punter? Do you think it was the sort of gamble that reflects badly on racing, or do you think it's part of the material of the game?
Oh, this is the game we're in, Maddie. This is the game. If we work in racing, if you think it's whiter than white, you're very much mistaken. Like, this was, I don't know what anybody else thought. I knew nothing about it, but I absolutely loved it. If you think of the planning and the effort and everything, the stars that needed to align for all this to come together, it was like, we look back on Yellow Sam back and that story is still spoken about to this day. An amazing story. It was one of that we rehashed it last year in the Racing Post, and it was one of the most read stories of the whole year. I think people in general love gambling stories and love to hear somebody getting one over the bookies. Like, it was almost fairy tale stuff from that point of view. Yes, there's obviously the counter argument to that is, if you're having a bet in the race and you're going by form and you're saying, right, these horses can't win. I accept that and I understand that. But this type of thing is, it's part of racing's DNA, whether you like it or not. And I think most people following it, like, I was in WhatsApp groups on Sunday, and I got more WhatsApps about this than I did about all the brilliant racing at Leopardstown. People were engrossed in it. They got a buzz out of it. They were like going, oh my God, this is incredible. Like, these horses, the prices they were, look at the prices now. I wasn't on the first one, so will I do a double on the next two? And people are trying to decide what to do. And it's just, I don't know. Like, I think it was fascinating. I thought it was edge of the seat stuff when you see the horse absolutely tank and turn into the home straight and you're going, this unthinkable thing could actually happen. And I was kind of like, I had no personal involvement in it, but I was gutted when it was beaten. Like, do you know, I was going, ah, geez, that's an awful shame. Like, do you know, for no other reason than just that, because people got behind the whole thing. And I don't know, maybe Tom will completely disagree with me, but it definitely, there was a buzz around Leopardstown about it. And, you know, Charles Burns obviously did it amazingly well one day at Roscommon. And there are stories over the years. If that last horse won at Musselburgh, we will be talking about this in 20 years' time when I'm like lost all my hair and, you know, I'm probably like going old and senile. But we will be talking about it. That's how big it was. And I don't know. I just thought it was a great buzz.
You don't often see it happen these days, do you? I mean, in the time that I've been involved in racing, I can't remember many of this magnitude. And you're right. I mean, the figures on our site, it was all anyone wanted to talk about.
Yeah, the figures, I'd imagine the figures were grossly exaggerated. I know the prices, but like, I often think these figures and these stories, it sounds amazing when you hear the figures, like, oh my God. And you know, these were big prices. So there was a lot of money at stake here. And, yeah. But like, you know, I doubt, like, I don't know. I would doubt that it was the absolute colossal figures that were spoken about or rumored, like the stuff you hear at the race course. Like, I doubt it was those massive, massive figures. It was still huge figures, obviously. But yeah, you don't see it too often these days, Maddie.
Well, before we go to TC, let's get James's view on this. I mean, talk from your perspective, James, about this gamble and what it meant for you.
Yeah, I'm not too sure about the overall figures, what the liabilities would have been for us if the last one had popped in. But I have to echo what DJ says there. I'd be one of those personally who loves a bit of magic brought into these gambles over the years. As he says, Charles Burns at Roscommon that day many years ago, and Barney Curley from when I was a kid too. So it was one of those where you thought, yeah, everybody's eyes are focused on Leopardstown. Let's maybe try and pull one off on the Sunday at Musselburgh and Suddle. And in the end, I'd have to say what DJ has to say. I'm just a bit of a bit disappointed that didn't come off, because these kind of gambles add a little bit of spark and a bit of magic to the sport, and you want to see people win a few bob from time to time.
Okay, nicely summed up. What's your view, TC? Because I know we have spoken in the past as well about how often perception isn't great with these things. Do you disagree to what the other two have said?
I wouldn't say I disagree, but I definitely wouldn't be on the strong side of I really wanted all three to win. Look, if you go back far enough, the form was there for each of the runners. So for a start, you can't say these are literal no-hopers with absolutely no chance. The form was there. They just had to bounce back to the form after 1 or 2 years back. I don't know. Gambles provide great stories, as DJ said. It brought a load of extra colour to a couple of really poor meetings on the whole, and Musselburgh, especially Southall. I just feel that as a punter, you can feel really hard done by, especially if you back the second in those races. Yes, you may have missed something from your own view, but generally, it's people that know, isn't it? It's people that know something extra. They get on at prices, then the traders massively cut the odds for those runners. Instantly, they were short priced. I think I was awake at 2 a.m. on Saturday night, well, Sunday morning, and I looked at the cards because I was just engrossed in the US stuff at that point in time, because Saturday night was decent in stateside. Looked at the two British cards, or the Scottish card and the one at Southwell, and I just saw there were three of them were odds on. I was just thinking, what is going on here? And then I looked at the form, and you know, there's just something there that kind of puts me off. Like, it's great that the first two won because it builds the story and everyone's getting really hyped up, and the viewing figures for that race at Musselburgh, the 4:25, must have been huge compared to what they were expecting. But I secretly really wanted to lose, you know. I just don't like seeing all three win in a major coupe like this. Look, great planning from whoever organised it and whatnot. And the first two won, I'm sure plenty of people cashed out on their bets and made a few bob here and there, or laid off the last one. But there's just a bit of a feeling there that last one just didn't really deserve to win, did it? I can't be in love with the treble. If it came up, I wouldn't have been the happiest one jumping off the roof to the rooftops and everything.
I think people will see Tom's side too, and I do as well. I think there are completely two sides to it. Like, and you know, I'm not necessarily arguing hugely in one direction or another. I'm just saying for the narrative of the day. It was interesting, and yes, there is the side that Tom is talking about. And if you spent hours studying the race, and you, I think even Hugh Taylor tipped up the second horse in the Southern race, and maybe followers would have backed that. And you know, obviously that was unlucky because it bumped into something that had improved. But I can completely see the two sides to it, Maddie.
The thing is as well, like, it's not like the punter's got the value, is it? It's not like a horse was priced up at dramatically too big and they were grabbing a bit of the value. The fact is that the horse was priced up based on the recent efforts that the horse has shown. The likes of Blowing Dixie had shown nothing. The first one, was it Far Away? Also showed nothing. I know that Moose switched stables and had only been in Laura Morgan's yard for 11 days. Maybe there was like a few points here and there. Blowing Dixie may have been should have been 10s when it was 14s, but it's not like you're grabbing the value. It's just you know something extra about these horses, whoever's in the know. They've absolutely smashed it up at big prices and then instantly gone into odds on favouritism, and then it just kind of ruins the vibe, I feel.
Okay, but it's a very divisive subject, and I'm sure all our listeners will have a lot to say on it. So do get in touch on social media and email and wherever, and let us know what your views on it are. I'm sure another thing that we'll all have lots of views on are the affordability checks. Big story last week that rumbled on and on throughout the week. The Gambling Commission, you know, potentially going to put these checks in play. DJ, as a punter, you know, we're all passionate punters for the Racing Post. We all, you know, endorse responsible gambling. What does this mean going forward? It could have a horrendous implication for the industry, couldn't it?
Yeah, of course it could. You know, I'm obviously based in Ireland, so I'm probably not the best person to talk on the subject, because at the moment it's a British thing. But obviously it's very, very concerning, and the implications could be massive. Tom would probably have more to say on it than I would, but it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward and whether this scenario is actually going to happen. It's going to turn a lot of people away from the sport, and you can also see both sides, but it's certainly worrying, Maddie.
Mm. And TC, I mean, how would you feel if, you know, it's a very intrusive thing, isn't it, to be giving people this information? And a lot of people would argue, well, what I spend my income on is up to me. And a lot of people would go out and spend huge amounts of money on other things, and that's unregulated. But now they're wanting to you know, bring it in more, and racing has been targeted. What's your view?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm the most clued up person. Obviously, I had last week off. I say obviously, like everyone should know that. They obviously shouldn't. So I didn't read every story here and there. I watched a few videos and read a couple of stories that we published. It's just far from ideal, isn't it? I really don't want it to go through from a personal point of view and for the sport. It's just not great. And is it £100 a month, they said? I mean, some people would easily do that in the first race at Cheltenham, wouldn't they? And it's just a bit silly, really. I mean, yes, responsible gambling, all over that. It's got to be monitored. And there are certain people out there, like bookies can see trends of accounts and stuff that they can monitor the actual people that need monitoring for responsible gambling. I don't think it should be the same for every single punter. And as DJ said, it's going to turn people away from the sport, which is never good news.
Okay, well, let's move our attentions back to the racing then, and back to Leopardstown on Sunday. Let's talk about the juvenile hurdling division. There was no Zana here in the spring juvenile hurdle. French Asiel didn't go either, so that left Quilixios to extend his unbeaten record. We hadn't seen him since October, and this was a smart performance. He looked to get slightly tired in the closing stages, but I think we can forgive him that, DJ.
Yeah, he was very good. It was very straightforward. It was one of these performances at Leopardstown that was just a performance from a horse that was vastly superior to anything he was running against. I think Zana here is much better than him. Just a personal thing. I know people are very much divided, and there's not a huge amount between them in the betting for the Triumph Hurdle, but I think at the moment Zana here is the best value favourite at the Cheltenham Festival. I think he should be shorter than he is. I think he's won a fast run race where he's annihilated a good horse in St. Sam, and he's won a slowly run race at Christmas when he needed a turn of foot. I think Zana here is very, very good. And as regards Cheltenham and, you know, horses to look out for going forward, for a long time, the last couple of weeks, I've been very, very keen on St. Sam for the Boodles Juvenile Hurdle. And he was second, obviously, in the Grade 1, really keen out in front under Danny Mullins. I think when he gets a fast pace and a bit of cover at Cheltenham, I think he could turn out to be a really well-handicapped horse, because given the distances he's been beaten by horses, I don't know how he can get a mark in the 140s, so I think he's going to be rated in the 130s, and I think he could be different class to what he's going to be running against in the Boodles at Cheltenham.
It's a nice angle,
and I just hope he goes there.
We'll all be hoping for you, DJ. He's been a horse that's been bandied around for that race, hasn't he, for a couple of months now, St. Sam, but he was no match for Quilixios. TC, your view on the Triumph? French Asiel, I really wanted to see him, but Willie Mullins, he pulled him out. He obviously wasn't prepared to run him, having just been transferred to his yard. He'd be the one I'm still interested in seeing, but we haven't seen what he can do in better company, whereas this horse proved it now.
Yeah, exactly that. Some people were gutted that we didn't see French Asiel at Leopardstown. I'll be in the same camp as DJ with Zana here. I think he's the worthy favourite in this race. The Triumph isn't a race that I tend to really want to get involved in. There's always a few shocks, a few unpredictabilities. It's because the horses are so, you know, lightly raced and they're open to any amount of improvement. Look, this Quilixios has done absolutely nothing wrong. He's won all three races under rules. He won his point as well. Being sent off at prohibitive odds. I couldn't believe he was 11-8 on Saturday evening, by the way. I know this sounds like after-timing, but I did nap him in the punt just to confirm to after-time Ansel out there. But it was ridiculous that Umdor came in for such support. I presume it was just the Mullins combos rolling over. He has a massive engine, but Zana here just looks a cut above for me in the Triumph.
Gordon Elliott has this division sewn up, according to a lot of people, and the guys there thinking Zana here is obviously the one to stick with. Let's move on to Appreciate It. It was a Willie Mullins show, wasn't it? The Dublin Racing Festival, spectacular weekend for the Clusterton team. Where does the value lie in the Supreme Market now? Because I want to take this horse on. Maybe I'm wrong. What do you think, TT?
I think he's a 2.5 miler, Appreciate It. He just seems a grinder. Saying that, he clearly has the ability to win over 2 miles. He's done it time and time again. It's not a race again that, like the Triumph, that I want to get stuck into at this stage. As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I think Ganapathy at about 25s, if he goes to the Supreme, is a decent each way bet, but he's going to be the second or third string for Willie Mullins behind Appreciate It. It's hard to imagine Ganapathy beating Appreciate It, but at the same time, 25s each way in a race like this compared to whatever price Appreciate It is, it's a short price favorite. That's much better odds for me. He just seems a grinder who needs to step up and trip. But at the moment, he's just at the top of the 2 mile division because there's no horse that can live with him.
I think you've summed it up nicely there. And although I think I could get him beat, it is hard to try and find a horse to do that with. DJ, are you going to defend this horse because he has done so little wrong?
Yeah, I think it speaks volumes that we were a little bit underwhelmed by the fact that he's won a grade one convincingly. Do you know what I mean? It's been bad. I think he was so good at Christmas that it almost took us by surprise how good he was at Christmas over that trip. And I think everybody, when horses do that once, you expect it all the time. And he obviously didn't live up to the same kind of hype that he showed at Christmas. But like, I think we're probably being a bit harsh on him. And I spoke to Paul Townend about this, and he said, we think so much of this horse that we're actually saying, he was good, but he wasn't very good. And yet he won a grade one easily. So that says a lot. As regards horses for Cheltenham, I think Blue Lord ran a lovely race under Brian Cooper. Again, he was a little bit keen. He probably was in the wrong position at the wrong times and had too much ground to make up, but he was still a little bit keen. And I like the way he hit the line. He's learning all the time. And under a more aggressive ride in the Supreme, I think he will be a massive player. I think it's a big ask for him to make up the ground unappreciated in the Supreme. It's a lot of ground to make up, but I do think he's a horse with huge improvement in him. And from an each way perspective for the Supreme, I think Blue Lord is very interesting.
That's exactly what I was after. So thank you very much. Let's go back to James now and get some prices then. Appreciate it. And indeed, before we touch on Monkfish, what price him for the Festival Novices Chase, James?
Yeah, so Monkfish, very, very impressive over the weekend, wasn't he? And he's now 8 to 11. He's a very short price there for the festivals, the former RSAs we know. Then we have Royal Pagoy, a horse I really, really like. And you get the impression now, owned by Rich Ritchie as well, that this horse is not going to go up against Monkfish. It's either going to be the National Hunt Chase or go for that Gold Cup option for Venetia Williams. Latest Expedition, 7-1. Next Destination for Paul Nicholls, 8-1. And it's 10-1 bar those. But Monkfish, you couldn't have been more than impressed by that performance. And I think didn't really come out of third gear, did he?
And maybe in contrast to Appreciate It, this horse actually showed us and surprised us more at the slightly lesser trip of 2 miles, 5.5 furlongs. This was awesome, TC, and I'm in love with this horse. I think he's just faultless, isn't he?
Was that Monkfish, sorry?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, he's an absolute monster, isn't he? Sauntered clear. You just know with Rich Ritchie and Willie Mullins that they're going to keep getting these machines going along their conveyor belt of talent that they have. And Monkfish just looks the latest to follow in the hoofprints of, you know, Forheen, Duvan, Vator and the like. He's really hard to fault, Monkfish. He always seems to improve race on race. And you know, how are you going to get him beat? It's very difficult to go against him at this stage. He's hard to find holes in.
I think he, as well as being so good, he's also so tough. An RPR of 170 for this performance. DJ, I mean, the hype is justified, isn't it, in this horse's case?
Yeah. Going into the season, like, everybody was saying they were looking forward to Monkfish going over fences. But I was kind of going, I was just about won the Albert Barthes and God, he was well beaten by the old Carrot Fairy House over hurdles. And, you know, maybe they're just getting a bit carried away. And just because he looks like a chaser, we think he's going to be this second coming. But like what he's done this year, like this performance had serious substance to it. Like, he beat Latest Exhibition, a grade one winner who won at this meeting last year, who was just touched off, obviously, by him in the Albert Bartlett, who's rated 153. He beat him on the bridle, being eased down by 11 lengths. Andy Dufresne was beaten 17 lengths, his rate 149, and won his last two races. Asterion Falange, a grade one winner, was beaten 18 lengths. Phil Zudare, who got within a couple of lengths of Envoy LN, obviously, you know, it was a different type of race, and Envoy LN is different to horses in that he does what he has to. Like, he finished fifth, and he was beaten 44 lengths. So you're dealing with something completely different here. And with Monkfish, it's like when fences come, he, without Paul asking him, he knows exactly where they are. He knows exactly what stride to take off on. And he gives them the perfect amount of light. Like, he doesn't, he's not overly high at them. He's not low. He just glides over them. And, like, you watch him in a race, and it's almost like Willie Mullins was saying all week, like, or all weekend, oh, this is like fantasy racing. But watching him on Sunday was like watching a fantasy race, as in, it's exactly the way you're supposed to jump. It's exactly the way you're supposed to travel. He wasn't keen at all. He was just nicely settling Paul's hand. He lobbed along at his own pace. And he just effortlessly drew a race to win by. Like, what could he have won by? Could he have won by 17, 18 lengths if he wanted to? He probably could. If, obviously, this won't happen. And I hate people that do this, and it's stupid. But if he ran in the Gold Cup this year, he would win the Gold Cup this year.
That doesn't surprise me. That doesn't surprise me. And on that, I was going to say, this horse excites me more than Envoy Len does. Does he excite you that much, TJ?
Yeah, like, yeah. I think after Sunday, he'd have to. They're different types. You know, look, we've spoken so much about Envoy Len, like, so much. And I know, like, I think it's mental the way people react to opinions. And you and Jimmy Hill are completely entitled to your opinion. And you're saying, this horse is overrated. I don't think he's as good as people are saying they are. And that's basically what we do every day of the week. When you're tipping a horse, you're basically saying you think that horse is better than the other horses. And that's all you're doing. So this ridiculous stuff that James Hill was called on Twitter, like, bonkers stuff. But I do think both of you are wrong, because it's a great trait in a horse to be able to win by exerting the least amount of energy. And we saw that with Monkfish, obviously, on Sunday. And Envoy Len, we have no idea how good he is yet, because all he's doing is winning races. So we've no idea. We might get to find out in the March. We might not. Who knows? But I can see why you would be more excited by Monkfish than Envoy Len. But I still think when horses keep winning races, you just have to be excited by them.
Just like we were saying with Honeysuckle earlier. I mean, I'm not crabbing Envoy Len at all. And I don't think there's anything wrong with winning Cozily, as you say, or that not being, you know, 100% representative of what he can do. I do disagree with Jimmy on that one. But anyway, we'll leave that for another day, because we could talk about this for hours. What about Kenboy then? The Paddy Power Irish Gold Cup. He made most in that under a brilliant ride from Danny Mullins. The Storyteller second. We had Delta Work back in third. Manella Indo was the real disappointment in this race. And Melon didn't really seem to turn up either. So what impact does this have going forward, DJ?
Very little, I'd say, Maddie, to be honest. Of all the races at Leopardstown, it was probably the most disappointing in the sense that we were hoping, you know, Melon might be able to take another step forward. We were thinking maybe Delta Work might come back to his form of last season. There was this suspicion that Manila Indo was maybe a horse of serious potential and could improve again. And then what happened was blatantly obvious after the event. Kenboy got a freebie. He loves Leopardstown. He is a very solid staying chaser who, you know, jumped reasonably well, very well in the main, made 1 or 2 hours. And just, it was one of these races where you were kind of saying after maybe 5 or 6 fences, this Kenboy is just going to win. I was never happy with Delta Work. I hated the way they rode Melon. I hated it. And I was actually going to do a whole column on it on Saturday, and I didn't. I think Sunday was the time to just let Melon do what Melon does and find out. Just find out. It's like, I hate, if you remember Flemingstar years ago, Flemingstar was this horse that raced enthusiastically, that loved doing things, you know, his way, and Andrew Lynch just let him do it. And then when he stepped up to 3 miles in the Lexus at the time, the famous Lexus, the Tidal Bay one, Andrew Lynch held him up and held him up and tried to reserve his energy and tried to reserve his energy. I'm not a jockey, I'm not a trainer, I don't know, but I think if you're such a good jumper and you're always gaining ground in the air, when you gain ground in the air and then you're being restrained, I think that has to use some amount of energy. And I would have just loved on Sunday to see Melon popped out in front and just let him do his thing. I think he would have had them straight, leaving the back straight. And if he didn't get home, he didn't get home. But at least we'd know. And that was the disappointing thing for me, because I don't think you can ride Mellon the way you rode him. You can understand why they did it, but that's not Mellon. And I fear now that maybe he's going to go for the Ryanair and we're not going to get a look at him doing his thing in the Gold Cup, because his performance last year, and I've said this before, apart from the last fence in the Mars chase last year, was the greatest jump on display I've ever seen at Cheltenham. It was incredible. The way he jumped, the ease with which he was attacking his fences. I would have loved to have seen him in the Gold Cup in that sort of form, but I don't think we're going to get to see it now.
It's a shame, isn't it? Because I don't think Album Photo will necessarily be quaking in his box at the sight of Ken Boy dominating and winning this Irish Gold Cup. And the fact he has the stayers as an alternative tells you a lot, doesn't it?
I was there, and sometimes you hear these things and you know, it's kind of like something might be mentioned and you'd go, ah, come on, like that's not going to happen, you know. But I was there, and there was like definite, in Willie's voice and what Willie was saying, there is a definite chance that Ken Boy could go for the Stayers hurdle. He thinks fences around Cheltenham in a Gold Cup is not Ken Boy's thing. And like, you might think this is fanciful thinking, but if I wasn't there, I would have said it probably was. But I was there standing beside him when he said it. And there is more substance to this than you might think.
Okay, what price can we get on Ken Boy now for the Gold Cup and the Stayers then, James?
Yeah, so if you fancy him to go to the Stayers, he hasn't run over hurdles since Punchestown in 2017, so that would be close to 4 years if he does turn up over at the Stayers hurdle, sponsored by ourselves, of course, here at Paddy Power. So 12-1 for the Stayers, and now he's down to 10-1 for the Gold Cup. And as what David says and what Willie says as well, maybe the chase course and those fences just don't suit with him when it comes to the Gold Cup. We've seen him not just relish them there in the last few seasons.
Before we talk about the highlights this weekend, DJ, just want to give you the opportunity to have a quick word on David Mullins, who, of course, made the decision to leave the saddle, hence why Danny was on board. Ken Boy, I mean, you've spoken a lot with him about this decision, which was a shock to most of us. Did it shock you?
Yeah, it did. It's not racing's thing. I said that in the interview. It's not racing for a jockey at the peak of their powers at 24 years of age to stop when they're not injured and, you know, they're not, you know, banned or suspended or anything like that. It's very strange. And I just found talking to him, it was fascinating listening to him. He's a really, really nice guy, just kind of down to earth, normal. And see, I think we regard jockeys as different species, which they are. Like, they get these falls and you say, how could you get back up on a horse after a fall like that? And we regard them as different species. But like, at the end of the day, it's the most normal thing in the world to have a job and then say to yourself, God, I don't like this job. It could be like you could be working nights as a security man or something. And you go, I hate having to go to bed during the day and it doesn't suit my lifestyle because I'm missing time with my kids, or I'm missing, you know, stuff that people are doing during the day because I have to sleep because I'm working at night, you know. And if a night watch security man said that to you, you'd say, yeah, get out of there. What are you doing? You're not enjoying it. Just get out. So because it's racing, we regard it differently. And you say you're ridiculous for stopping at 24. But when he actually put all the pieces of the jigsaw together and told me how much he hated being a jockey and the lifestyle and what was involved. He loves horses. He absolutely loves horses. But the lifestyle of being a jockey was what he really didn't like. And to be honest, it made perfect sense. And I'm delighted he's out and he's happy and he felt it's a weight off his shoulders. It's a shame for racing because, you know, he's a really talented guy that won the Grand National at 19 years of age. And, you know, he was a kind of a jockey that acted on instinct. And I loved watching him when he was at his best. So he'll be missed, like, but I think it's the right call.
A brave decision and the right one at that. Now, looking forward to this weekend, we have some fascinating contests that we can take in, including one of the big betting events, which is the Betfair Hurdle. We're going to talk through all of that in just a moment.
Here at Paddy Power, we're the home of the Money Back Special with some incredible offers every single week. Check out the website or app today. Terms and conditions apply. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
Welcome back to the final few furlongs of this Monday podcast. And Newbury is the big highlight this weekend. The Betfair Hurdle, the main affair, the Grade 3. It's so competitive. But also we have Champ in there to make his eagerly anticipated return, as well as Altior. So could be implications for Cheltenham just after the Dublin Racing Festival. DJ, where do you stand on Champ? Do you think he could be a proper Gold Cup contender after this weekend?
I don't know, Maddie. I don't know. I hope so. I like the horse. He's plenty to prove now, so he does. It'll be a very interesting race because there's like loads in there that will give him plenty to think about. You know, if Lost in Translation runs, obviously he's interesting. Clan de Zobo is in there and Harry Cobden is jocked up already, so it looks like he's going there. Yeah, a real interesting race. You've got to hope Champ wins because he'd add another kind of bit of spice to the Gold Cup. If he won that impressively, he'd definitely be second favourite for the Gold Cup. So I hope he wins. I really do. I'm certainly looking forward to seeing him back.
Yeah, we've been waiting a while, haven't we, with his breathing problems and then Nicky Henderson struggling to find a suitable race. What about Altior then? Do you think that the champion chase is well and truly gone for him, TC? Or do you think he still deserves, you know, maximum respect?
Well, this is Altior. He's an 11-year-old now, but he's the champion, isn't he? He deserves maximum respect. I don't think he's going to win the race, as I've already mentioned. I think Chacun Pourcoir is in a league of his own at the moment. But Altior will need to win the Game Spirit this Saturday if he's going to feature at all in the champion chase. He's won the Game Spirit 3 times in the past. This is his attempt at a fourth win. He's looking at the decks now. He's against Grenadine, who's rated £8 inferior. So Royale, £6 inferior. Sky Pirates in there as well, which is interesting. You'd expect him to get the job done. Would I want to back him? Absolutely not. But do I want him to win? Yes.
Okay, and James, any thoughts on those two races for you? They're going to make a difference either way, aren't they?
Yeah, Altior is 8-13 for the Game Spirit of the weekend. Very short price. I think you want him to win, as Thomas alluded to there, just to give the champion chase a bit of spice with Chacun Pourcoir at the top of the betting market. In terms of the Denman Chase, we've got 6-4 joint favourites, Clan de Zobo and Champ, who we've not seen, of course, since last year. Lost in Translation 7-2 and Kalashnikov 8-1. So hopefully Champ as well can do the business and head towards Cheltenham next month. Big 2 runs for Nicky Henderson of the weekend.
Indeed, it's going to change a lot, isn't it? That's the 2.25 at Newbury, the Betfair Denman Chase, and then the 3 o'clock Betfair Cheltenham Free Bet Pot Builder Chase, registered as the Game Spirit. That's at 3 o'clock. Now, the next race after that, the feature arguably, is the 3.35, the Betfair Hurdle I mentioned earlier. Do you have an up-to-date market for us, James?
Yeah, we do. We've got the Tolworth winner for Harry Fry. Yeah, Metier's 5-1. He heads the betting market for us as well. Karzand for Dan Skelton, 6-1. Soaring Glory is 7-1. Mr. Coffee, 10-1. And 12-1 bar those. So we'll see how Harry's horse gets on after Sandown. Heads are betting in a big, big pot as well.
It is a big pot, isn't it? And could influence the Supreme. I hope they run Sky Pirate here. That hurdles mark is such tempting. Why would they not run him here? I think it's they should take advantage of that, but that's just my selfish view. DJ, who caught your eye among the entries?
Oh, there's only one horse for me here, Maddie. Looking forward to this race and have been for a long time. I think Mr. Coffee is the best handicapped hurdler in England or Ireland. He was beaten last time at Sandown, but races involving a horse called Totterdown are just not races. They're like bonkers races. Heavy ground at Sandown when Totterdown is running. It's so frustrating because he goes so far clear and jockeys don't know what to do and they're afraid to let him go, and then something will go after him and you get racing too early. And it was just a complete mess of a race. Benson ended up winning it, an improving horse as well, but don't think you've seen Mr. Coffee in a true light there. His previous performance at Sandown of market 1.28 suggested he had far more than £10 in hand. And I think the race last time at Sandown might just have made a man of him, Maddie. He's a seriously talented horse. The day he beat Shake 'Em Up Harry at Newbury over Christmas last year, 2 years ago now, I thought he had Supreme written all over him. And he was far too keen next time at Huntington, and that put pay to that chance. But yeah, I love this horse. I think Newbury is absolutely made for him. That long home straight, they're going to go quick. He's going to get plenty of cover. He's got form and soft ground. 138, if he settles and if he does things the right way, if he relaxes in his race and if he jumps well, I'll be so disappointed if he's not bang there coming down to last open mark of 138, because I think he's definitely at the very least got £12 to play around with.
Well, you must think 10-1. You're still not too, you know, not too sad about that. That's a decent price. TC, I mean, this is a great race. It always is. We've got Dan Skelton's Cadzand, who was a really impressive winner last time. Soaring Glory, whose bumper form now reads really well. I've mentioned Sky Pirate and my sort of vendetta against the way they've campaigned that horse. 50 Ball for Gary Moore, another progressive type. Who did you come down on?
Well, this is a great race for a punter, isn't it? They're 5-1 in the field with Metier at the moment. Metier has got to be one of the best horses to take on in this race in recent years. Surely. Yeah. I mean, that Tolworth form is weak. I would go to that point as well. When I was on RP Live that day and I was just saying the form is awful. And you know what? The form in behind is already proven to be bad. The third's been beaten since Shake 'Em Up Harry, who was second, is also in the Betfair Hurdle. And Harry Fry hasn't had a winner for 30 days. Like, his horses are running below par. Most of them are running below par.
You have to remind me with them. Ask me early on Saturday. I thought it was onto a great one, though. He never went yard.
Exactly. So you have to take Metier on. And I know DJ can be bullish about one of his selections, but I'm going to be equally bullish here. A horse called Soaring Glory. I've been all over him since the start of the season. I thought he was a supreme horse. I really did. And I thought he was going to be the leading light for John Dwyer Neil in a comeback season for the trainer after a couple of, under the radar years. And this Soaring Glory, he beat Brave Man's Game on his reappearance in a Chepstow Novice Hurdle back in October. And then he ran second to a horse called Dusart, who everyone knows could be the second coming. Like, he's a really exciting horse for Nicky Henderson. Yes, he then fell next time at Wetherby when he was gonna win that day, but he was 1-8. It wasn't much of a race. He fell coming towards the last hurdle. And then last time he ran in Ascot in the Supreme Trial. He finished third to My Drogo, who was a useful horse, got plenty of speed, My Drogo. The second was Alain Denebo Lad, who is rated 1-4-1. Soaring Glory gets a run off 1-3-3 here. I'm convinced he's also got a stone in hand, much like DJ thinks Mr. Coffee's got a stone in hand. They're both towards the bottom of the weights. I'm really excited about Soaring Glory. He's going to be my nap of the week in my Racing and Football Outlook column, which I'm in the process of writing.
Fantastic. So I presume he's going to be your nap. Let's just get those confirmed in any other fancies just now.
This will not be beaten.
Go on then, DJ. Who's your best bets of the week, or indeed the weekend?
Sure, it would be Mr. Coffee. I in the Betfair Hurdle, just for all the points I've said, I'd be very keen to take Altior on. I know Greenatine is in there and Scoroyal. I think Altior is slow now. And I think we're talking about a different Altior now to the Altior we knew and loved. I would have said, if we were having this conversation 2 years ago, I would say Altior was one of the best horses of all time. One of the best horses I've seen. I love him. Nothing can ever beat him. And I adore this horse. But everything he's done in the last year and a half has screamed that he's slow. Everything. Like his piece of work with Epitant that day in Newbury. You know, the way he raced at Kempton, the way he raced in this race last year, even when he won his second champion chase, to me, he just looks like he's crying out for further now. And I think he's always going to be vulnerable over 2 miles. I can't have him on my mind for the champion chase. I think he'd have a big chance in the Ryanair. Whether there's anything able to exploit that lack of pace in the Gamesbird, I think it's the Betfair Builder Chase now. I don't know, but I'd be very keen to take him on. And yet, like, everything coming from the yard saying, you know, he's doing these brilliant pieces of work, all the speed he's showing, it doesn't add up, because what we're seeing on our television screens and what we're hearing from his work at home are not piecing together. He just looks slow. And I adore Altior. I just don't know if he's still got the pace that he used to have.
We'll find out a little bit on Saturday anyway. TC, your nap, please, or any other fancies?
Yeah, Soaring Glory, 3:35, Newbury in the Betfair Hurdle. Not had enough time to look at the all-weather cards or the US stuff just yet.
Okay, but I'm sure if you keep your eye on his social media and in the weeklies, you'll hear a lot more from both of us this week. Thanks to DJ, thanks to TC and James for their company this week. It's been a fantastic show, but the racing deserved it. As usual, Bruce and the team will be back on Friday, so hear their selections for the big weekend action. Then, until then, best of luck with your betting, and we'll see you soon.